Okay, great. Julie, thank you so much. I hope you had a great lunch. Domino's delivered on time for me. Yeah, right. Anyhow, I used to see the Domino's delivery guy so much, my mother said, oh, sure, you'll probably end up marrying that guy. It was pretty bad. I was just saying to Barb, I go, I don't feel like I've left home. I feel like I'm still in L.A. And because everybody sounds the same, looks the same, you guys feel like sisters to me. And, you know, this is some Nebraska trivia and facts, and let's see if you guys knew this about yourself. Did you know that in 1927 that Perkins Hastings invented Kool-Aid?
Yes.
You guys knew that, huh? Okay, the state insect here is the? No, you guys don't live in Louisiana. It's the honeybee. Okay, where's the birthplace of the Reuben sandwich? Yeah. Okay, Spam is produced in Fremont. Isn't that trippy? In Blue Hawaii, Nebraska, no female wearing a hat that would scare a timid person can be seen eating onions in public. Thank God for the internet, huh? Okay, here's Bruce. I want to tell you about these two just ratty girls, just great old AAs. I love AA. These two guys, Joe and Charlie, have you ever heard of them?
Yeah.
Joe and Charlie brings a good book alive. Well, Joe and Charlie, they had written the Ninth Step Promises, and they adapted it for AA, and I went ahead and adapted it for OA. And this is referring to a time before my alcoholic foes turned against me and literally destroyed me. This is the way I used to feel when I binged on my alcoholic foods. This is the Ninth Step Promise. If you're still drunk.
Whenever I binged on my alcoholic foods, I knew a new freedom and a new happiness. Whenever I binged on my alcoholic foods, I would comprehend the word serenity and I would know peace. Whenever I binged on my alcoholic foods, no matter how far down the scale or up the scale I had gone, I could see where one more binge would benefit me. Whenever I binged on my alcoholic foods, that feeling of uselessness and self-pity would disappear. Whenever I binged on my alcoholic foods, I would lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in isolation. Whenever I binged on my alcoholic foods, self-seeking and self-improvement would slip away. Whenever I binged on my alcoholic foods, my whole attitude and outlook upon life would change. Whenever I binged on my alcoholic foods, fear of people and of economic insecurity would leave me. Whenever I binged on my alcoholic foods, I would be numb to intuitively know how to handle situations which were baffling me. Whenever I binged on my alcoholic foods, I would suddenly realize that food was doing for me what I could not do for myself. Now think about that. When you find something that will do that for you, it is one of the greatest things you can find in the world. Food was my friend, and food did these things for me for a long, long time. But then, due to the progression of the illness, one day food started doing to me the things I was afraid would happen. And I began to get into serious, serious difficulty. I was a very confused individual, not knowing what was going on and not knowing I had progressed into a full-blown compulsive overeater. I spent the last 5 or 6 years of my binging desperately trying to capture those good feelings back from my eating alcoholic foods, not realizing, not knowing I would never be able to. And I damn near destroyed myself in the process. I came to OA, you gave me a book, I read the book, I applied the first 9 steps in my life to the best of my ability. And one day, I woke up with these promises in my mind and in my life. That's why I don't eat my alcoholic foods today. If I hadn't found these promises, these good things that food used to give me, if I hadn't found them, I'd still be searching for them. I'd be out there trying to use food or something else, or I'd be dead. The only reason I don't eat my alcoholic foods is because I no longer need my alcoholic foods. I've got everything good that my alcoholic foods used to give me from the first 9 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. That's the miracle of Overeaters Anonymous. See, that's why people like me no longer eat our alcoholic foods. We've got all the good and none of the bad from the first 9 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. 9-step promises from page 83 of the Big Book. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going
to... I want to stop you right here, and I want to share something with you. That I had this girl come up to me, and she goes, "Sherry, I don't get it. I'm not getting the promises, and I've been around a lot longer than you." And I go, "Well, what do you mean?" She goes, "Well, you know, like the 9th and 10th step promises. You know, it says we'll recoil from the hot food as if a hot flame. We'll get all the freedom from financial insecurity. You know, blah, 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 blah." And I go, "Yeah, but what's a promise?" She goes, "I just said the 9th and 10th step promise." I go, "No, what's a promise?" She goes, "What do you mean?" I said, "A promise is, if you do this, then I'll do that." She goes, "Well, yeah. I go to meetings. I'm coming around longer than you." I go, "No, let's take a look at the 9-step promises and what Bruce just read to us," and he'll read it again.
If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, that means right now, we will be amazed before we're halfway through. Has anybody ever really dialed into program and all of a sudden the weight came off and they go, "Wow, how'd that happen?" Look at the hands. Okay? Coming back after relapse, Bruce raises his hands. He's down 50 pounds. And he goes, "Wow," he's amazed before he's
halfway through.
Okay, go ahead and read the rest of it.
"We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises?
Yeah.
They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will
always materialize if we work for them. Great. Thank you very much. Okay. They will always materialize if we work for them. So it's in the first statement, if we're painstaking about this phase, that means right here, right now, it says, if we work for them, they will always materialize. So God will do for you what you cannot do for yourself, but He will not do for you what He has given you the ability to do. So if you have the ability, you have the responsibility. I have the ability. I therefore have the responsibility to close my business on Friday and Monday to get my butt up here to help you. Okay? Because God answers prayers through people. Okay? So if you have the ability, you have the responsibility. If you have the ability to feed yourself, you have the ability to feed yourself to a healthy body weight. It's your responsibility. Now, as an incest survivor, I knew that it would take 100 lifetimes to really figure that one out. And you know what? Somehow, I'm an incest thriver, and it's like my sexual life is rocking at 54. Okay? I really believe that God did for me what I could not do for myself. But as far as the weight loss stuff and the cancer stuff, I've had to work through that. I really put everything I got into that. So God will do for you what you can't do for yourself, but He won't do for you what He's given you the ability to overcome. And if you have the power to pick up the fork, you have the power to put it down. Battles won or lost where? Okay, the battle is won or lost today, yesterday, or right now? Right now. Is God in the future or in the past? He's right now. So when you depart from God and you go into the future, you're on your own. But your ego went with you. Your kid with your soul tears went with you. All the problems of your past went with you. All your fears. You just disconnected from God. Think when you go in the past, God's there? Your ego is. So is your fear. So is your addiction. So is the little kid that has all those soul tears. Got to come back. Right here, right now. Right here, right now. The choice is ours. So I told you I was going to take some questions in regards to abstinence, and then after that, and we do want to stay on schedule, and what we found out is that you guys have a different schedule than the one that I submitted. So just to kind of review with you, we were supposed to finish at noon for lunch, which we did, but they told you you're going to finish at 11:30. Did that mess with your heads?
Yeah!
See, you'll mess with our food, right? So I thought maybe I'll just clear this up a little bit. So anyhow, I had a lunch break of 12 to 1:30, so anyhow, we're somewhere in between there now, and so we're going to go ahead, and I had that I was going to be done at 4, so I'm going to take us through 4, and I'm going to give you an option from 4 to 5, and I'll talk to you about that, and it's called Drop the Rock. So right now, I want to take some people who raise their hand. I'm going to take 6 people who would like to take the acid test for permanent abstinence to obtain and maintain a healthy body weight for life. So could I see a show of 6 hands that want to come up and let me review with them your personal abstinence and food plan? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And come right up here very, very, very quickly. Okay? Let's go. Over here. Fast, 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 because we got short on time. Okay, tell me your name.
Becky.
And Becky, tell me how long you've been in program.
A year and a half.
And how much weight have you lost?
95 pounds.
And what... Okay, so what is your abstinence?
3 meals a day with nothing in between.
Okay, and what is your food plan?
Basically, I have... 2 protein in the morning, 1 starch, a fruit, and a cup of milk, and 2 teaspoons of fat. And for dinner, I have 3 protein, 1 starch, and a fruit, and a vegetable, or 2 vegetables. And then for supper, 3 protein, 2 starch, and 2 vegetables, and a fruit.
Okay, and how long have you been abstinent? With this, what we're talking about right now.
Yeah, I haven't been probably now for 6 months.
Okay. Have you been gaining weight?
Not until 2 weeks ago I did.
Great. Okay. The abstinence that you've picked, which is 3 meals a day and nothing in between, do you feel you could go through the worst thing in life and still survive?
Yes.
Do you believe her?
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. Do you think she'll have a crummy meal every now and again?
Yes.
Yeah. Do you think she can turn around and clean it up?
Yes.
That's better than being demoralized and breaking your abstinence and ramming your car into a tree, right? Okay, I think it's great. Keep on. Okay? You have the power to re-choose. You started sliding down, and you got kind of wiggy, and then you said, you know what? I'm in the game. And you cleaned it up 2 weeks ago, right? Mm-hmm. What's going to happen is that those longer distances, you're going to get a crummy meal for maybe 3 days, and then 2 days, and then 1 day. And then pretty soon it might be 1 meal. And then pretty soon you won't mess up for a month or 2, because you're going to go from untrained to trained. Got it?
Got it.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Thank you. Julie, can you or Pam, somebody just kind of time me somewhere and don't let me talk more than each person for 3 minutes because we'll be here all day. I want to say something to you about abstinence and a food plan. Trained and untrained, intense training negates instinct. Like Pavlov's dogs. You ever seen a dog in your neighborhood when the bells go off, they come running home? No. They come home when they hear the food rustle, when you open the can, when they smell. That's the instinct of a dog. But you can train the instinct out of a dog just like it's been trained out of us, correct? So, what we have when we start off with abstinence and food plan, we are unconscious, incompetent. We don't even know. We don't even know. We go on a diet and we go back to the same old way because we're unconsciously incompetent. Can everybody relate to that? Then we move from consciously incompetent. So if you're a 5-year-old and you take the keys to the car and you move like that with a steering wheel and you jangle the keys, you're unconsciously incompetent. You don't even know, you don't even know how to drive, right? When you become consciously incompetent, all of a sudden you're 10 years old, you know you can't drive that car, but you got to get your mom to the hospital. You're consciously incompetent. I know I can't drive the car. I got to get help, right? So we're growing into our abstinence and our food plan to obtain and maintain a healthy body weight. Then we move from unconscious, where am I? So he doesn't have to drive. So then at 15, we become consciously competent. So at 15, 16, 18, whatever town you live in, you learn to drive. So you take everything you've got to manage that meal for the meal, for the day, for the week, for the whatever. So you're consciously competent. It takes everything you've got to be abstinent, right? Then, as you continue through the steps and you evolve into your abstinence and you obtain and maintain a healthy body weight, you can become unconsciously competent. So I'm unconscious half the time because I already know what to do around food. I don't have to think. Because I pretty much know what to eat Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I got to be a little more conscious, like how to negotiate, those weekends. Still, and it's not a problem, but it's like I got to be a little more alert, right? So it's like I can drive around home, like my car almost knows where to go. I can be unconsciously competent. If you said, Sherry, here's my car, get yourself back to Omaha, I would be consciously incompetent. I go, I don't know where I am. And I go, wow, look at the trees. I think I'll go this way. It's so beautiful. Wow, there's water. Wow, look at the corn. I mean, I would just be all over it. Everything would distract me. Okay, so that's what I want to share with you. It's a step-down method. It's a here, kitty. Come on. Tell us your name.
My name's Patty.
Hey, Patty. How long have you been in program?
24 years.
Okay, and how much weight have you lost and kept off?
And kept off 40.
Great. Okay. You can cry. Everybody cries.
Oh. I don't think I will. What do you want to know?
I want to know, what's your abstinence?
Right now, I'm not abstinent. I haven't had a really good abstinence for a couple of years.
Okay, today, what did you set as your abstinence?
3 meals a day.
Okay.
Nothing in between unless I have to have fruit.
Okay, so instead
of
saying...
Fruit is the only snack I can have.
Yeah, say it again.
Fruit is the only snack I can have.
Okay, so is this what you're saying? 3 meals a day, nothing in between. A snack is only considered a fruit. Does that mean live fruit, canned fruit, or candied fruit?
Well, probably live or canned.
Okay, live or canned. So you know what I do sometimes when I travel? Because I can't stand bruised fruit. You know those non-sugar peaches? Judy Jetson style, right? Those little cups. It's 25 calories. I really dig being able to have that because I don't really trust you guys. You're going to feed me, right? So I bring little things because it's like I don't trust people to take care of me. So it's like my fruits, a fresh fruit or like a little canned non-sugar thing. And then we need to be specific because we can talk ourselves into, say, carrots, and we can rationalize a carrot cake. Okay? It's really important to be really... Okay, so that's a good and easy abstinence. Do you think she can get through the rest of her life with that?
Yeah.
Okay, what about your food plan? How much weight do you want to lose?
Oh, 20 pounds.
20 pounds, okay. And how are you going to do that?
And that's not going to get that last 10 pounds, that 20, but right now I'm going to concentrate on 20.
Okay, did you hear that? Is that sane or what?
Yeah.
I'm only going to deal with where my feet are right now. I'm not going to deal with misperfection. I'm going to do what I can do. Okay? We don't want to get trapped up in perfectionism. That's just another form of alcoholism, ISM, incredibly short memory. We want perfect abstinence, but we don't want to get caught up in perfectionism. Okay, so this is very healthy. Go ahead. What's your food plan?
My food plan. how I eat is only sitting down, not in front of the TV. What else did I put on my list? I guess the only sitting down would be not standing up, wouldn't it? Okay, just eating, sitting down, don't eat standing up, and don't eat a snack or anything in front of the TV.
Great. Okay, simple, obtainable, sustainable. She's ready to begin. Get on the tricycle, get on a training wheeler, get on a two-wheeler, figure out if you want a 10-speed, a mountain bike, a cruiser. Great. Good luck to you. Thank you very, very much. Cecilia.
I'm out.
Oh, bring it on, girl.
I'm out. I'm good.
Tell us who you are.
Cecilia. Compulsive overeater.
How long you been in program?
It'll be 20 years in January.
How much have you lost and kept off?
About 30 pounds.
Great. Okay, what's your abstinence?
My abstinence is 3 meals a day, 2 snacks, no sugar or white flour.
Okay, and how long have you had that abstinence?
Well, I had the 3 meals and no snacks for about 15 years, and then the no sugar or white flour about three or four years ago.
So 3 or 4 years ago, you added no flour.
No white flour.
No white flour and no sugar, right. And you've done it perfectly for 3 to 4 years. Mm-hmm. Okay, do you think that that's going to work for her? Why would you think that would work for her? Because she has history. Okay? She has history. Okay, so now she has an abstinence that works for her, right? So she probably, how much weight do you want to lose?
Probably about 10 pounds.
Okay, so she'd like to lose 10 pounds. Tell us how you're going to do that.
Well, the food plan that I haven't been doing very well on. It is planning and preparing my meals.
Okay.
Eating out only once a week.
Okay, here's the thing. This is what I want you to stop. Here's the food plan I haven't been doing very well. I'm planning, I want you to flip it. I want you to start treating yourselves. Cecilia, I want you to start treating yourself better. This is what I'm committed to improve on. Start it like that. This is what I'm going to do. Tell me
this
it from
that.
What
I'm going to do.
Okay.
I'm going to prepare and plan my food, call my sponsor with my food every day. Drink a minimum of 4 cups of water, and eat out only once a week.
Okay. Do you think she can do that? Do you think eventually she's going to get like a little bored, and she's not going to want to call her sponsor and drink the water? Okay. So that's where she needs that recovery quotient we'll talk about in the afternoon to keep her in the game. Because the disease center's where? And that mind will eventually try and get in front of her beingness, but right now her beingness is really present. She's absent. She has an abstinence that really works. Cecilia, thank you so very much. So I had a girl come to me one day, and she goes, you know what, Sherry, I'm perfectly abstinent, but my food plan's a mess. It's so much easier to clean up your food plan than it is your abstinence. It's so much easier to clean up your marriage from being snotty and crabby than it is to go out and get a divorce. Because guess what? The next guy you marry, there you are. Same old bag of problems. It was never him to begin with. Hey, who are you?
Hi, my name's Dee.
Hey, Dee.
I've lost 107 pounds.
Woohoo!
I've been abstinent since August 17th of 09. I spent the entire last year in the hospital almost. And so I understand what you've been going through, and I had a rough time with my weight.
God.
And I don't let it get me down. I proceed. My abstinence is I have to eat, or my food plan, wait a minute.
Abstinence?
Abstinence first. Abstinence is to eat 8, 11, 2, 5, 8, and if I'm still up at 11, eat again.
What does that mean, 8, 5, 2, 11? Is that time?
Those are the times.
Oh.
And they're small meals.
Okay.
Very small meals.
Okay. How long have you been doing that?
Since the day before Thanksgiving last year.
Okay. 8 o'clock. Eat at 8 o'clock?
8 o'clock.
Okay.
11 o'clock.
Okay.
So that's kind of like a lunch.
Okay.
2 o'clock's kind of like a snack.
Okay.
A light snack.
Okay.
5 is dinner.
Okay.
8 is kind of a light snack because I usually retire about 11.
Okay. How old are you?
54.
Okay, we're the same age. So here's the thing. I don't want to mess with what she's got going on. She's got something that's working for her, but because I'm coming from a teaching place and this is on recording, I would say it would be very dangerous to set a time frame, because what if I said to her, hey, I want you to come to a really elegant dinner party at my house. Dinner starts at 8 o'clock. And she's like, shoot, my abstinence says if I don't eat by 5, I broke my abstinence. That would kind of put you in another prison, right? So that would be a good food plan thing to go with, right? Because what happens if she goes back into the hospital or, God forbid, something happens, and you know what, they don't bring her tray at 8, they bring it at 6 in the morning, or, God forbid, they bring it at 10. She breaks her abstinence. So I want to show you, we want abstinence black and white. It doesn't change. It's easily, it's effortlessly. So to me, that should be a food plan issue. But because you've had success for a year, I just want it from a teaching point of view. It's like you have to be able to be in Europe or in jail or in a hospital bed or whatever you can imagine. Because what if you're cooking your breakfast, it's 8 o'clock in the morning, and some idiot drives his car through your house and you don't get to eat. And you decide, I still got to have my breakfast at 11 o'clock, or you broke your abstinence.
I grab my protein bar and I'm done.
Okay, sounds like she's got a good backup plan, but you understand why I wanted to make a comment on that, okay?
Yeah,
okay.
I'm diabetic.
Okay.
And that's why we set the times, because okay. I've been bottoming out.
Okay.
And
what's bottoming out?
Bottoming out means 51, and 51 is a very low number. The lowest
that
number
has to do with her blood sugar. She can't risk it. That's what I'm trying to get the...
Yeah, oh, I forgot the blood sugar.
Yeah.
Blood sugar should only go down to 70, maybe 65.
So she's really on her game. She's watching it, she's watching it, she's watching it, and you're doing what works for you, right?
Right.
Okay, so what's your food plan?
My food plan is to eat protein, a small amount of protein, a small amount of vegetables, and a small amount of carbohydrate at my lunch and my dinner. My breakfast is fruit. The 2 o'clock is fruit. And the 8 o'clock I get fruit, vegetable, protein, and that's it.
Sounds like it's going to work for her, right?
Yes.
Okay. And so if she has a little bit too much carbs, she might gain weight, but worse than that, she's going to feel what?
Sick.
If she's going to throw her blood sugar off. So I think you have a good plan for yourself. God bless. Thank you very much. Thank you. Okay. How am I doing on time, Julie?
You're doing okay.
Okay.
What time did you want to end at?
I don't know. I didn't want to go over more than 3 minutes with each person.
Approximately 3 minutes for each person.
Okay. Yeah, let's be, just cue me, okay? Because I can talk for 10 hours. Hi.
Hi.
Tell us who you are. Hi, Sarana. How long have you been in program?
2.5 years.
Okay. And are you abstinent?
Yes, I've been abstinent 14 months.
Okay. And how much weight have you lost?
And kept off 40 pounds.
Okay, great. Great. Okay. Keeping it off is hugely important because remember, trained or untrained, sometimes you bump up until you learn how to be unconsciously competent. She's in the game. All right, tell us your abstinence.
My abstinence is no eating in the car, no eating standing up, and I added another one today. Up to 3 meals, 2 snacks.
Okay. Here's my thoughts on not eating in the car. I love to eat in the car. I love to eat in the car. Because if I'm out shopping, you know, nobody's commented on this top. Does anybody like this top?
Yeah.
I like, love this top. Okay, now when I was out shopping for this top, I didn't want to go home and cut and dice and toss, right? I love to eat in the car. I go to Ralph's, go through a salad bar, sit in the car, listen to little Dr. Laura, eat, have a great time with Dr. Laura, and I'm off shopping again.
That's my truth, okay? In the old days, I would go from drive-in to drive-in to drive-in, and all the white bags would be, it's drive-through, not drive-in, and they'd all be shoved under the seat of my car. I mean, what? I was so nuts back then. So the problem was not the eating in the car, it was the drive-throughs. So is it that you really want to give up eating in your car? A lot of people really enjoy the quiet, the isolation, listening to the radio. It's very, very comfortable.
No, it's sneak eating for me.
It's sneak eating, okay? Yeah.
And
okay.
I can't measure it or weigh it.
Okay, so if I eat in the car, am I doing it wrong and she's doing it right? If she doesn't eat in the car, is she doing it right and I'm doing it wrong?
No.
What are we doing?
It works for us.
Okay, yeah. Dignity of choice. If I was her sponsor and says, no, you can't do that. That's not what program's about, right? It's about helping that person find their truth and to get there. And a sponsor's nothing more than a babysitter until God takes over. Okay? Okay, so your food plan.
My food plan is up to 3 meals a day. 2 snacks, weighed and measured. The snacks are usually a fruit. Never a cake.
Okay.
Let's see. What else do I write here? Oh, I use the guidelines of the American Diabetes Association.
Oh, that's right, right.
I have that.
Right.
Aaron. And I also read labels.
Okay, and see, isn't that great? So she's conscious. Eventually, she will become unconsciously competent. She'll just go, this is what I do, this is what I buy. Like, I don't go through a grocery store and go, ooh, wow, look at that new stuff. I just go get my stuff. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm starting to do that.
Yeah.
Go in the middle. I'm on the outside.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you, when you count money for this, oh, they cut me off. Goodbye. Thank you. See? You guys have given me 3 days to speak and I need another 3. Hi, tell us who you are.
I'm Allison.
Hey, Allison.
Hi, Allison. And
how long have you been in program?
2.5 years.
Okay, how much weight have you lost?
10 pounds in the last month since I started being abstinent this way.
Oh, good, good, good. Okay. What's your abstinence?
3 meals, 2 snacks.
Okay.
And I'm trying to not do it after 8, but it's imperfect.
Okay, so, okay. You can be... To say an imperfect abstinence is an oxymoron, right? So an alcoholic would not say, I'm imperfectly sober.
Okay.
Okay, we don't want to get a perfect abstinence, 3 meals a day, nothing in between, 2 snacks. Food plan is part of the foods and behaviors. So her behavior that she wants to stop doing is what?
Eating after 8.
Eating after 8, okay. Kitchen closed. That's what I do.
Okay.
Boy, after that third meal, sometimes I eat so early you'd think I was a farmer. I swear to God, I just go, kitchen's closed, thank God that's over. Because I really know, like that third meal, I'm done. And sometimes it is such a relief because it's nice to have gates, right? Good fences make good neighbors. Okay, so go ahead.
Okay, well, I give myself breakfast choices, lunch choices.
For your food plan.
For my food plan.
Uh-huh, good girl.
Like I have these breakfast sandwiches or cereal or multigrain pancakes, but I have to try to watch that I'm having the serving size.
Okay.
Okay. I can have fruit with that. If it isn't already a protein, I can have an additional piece of cheese or something for protein.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so that's breakfast. Lunch, Judy Jetson, I'm going to start using that phrase.
Okay, I mean,
just whatever it is.
Yeah.
And extra fruit or vegetable if needed. Sometimes if I'm at the store, because the stores all have salad bars now, I'm like, you know, I'm going to get a salad bar for lunch today. Take one with me. But that's lunch. Dinner, pretty much whatever I fix for my family. I just try to have a serving of each thing.
Okay. So, does she sound like she's exchanged one prison for another?
No.
Doesn't that sound nice? Yes. Don't you want to go to her house for breakfast, lunch, and dinner? And it's nice. Okay, I have a... Thank you very much. Thank you. I have a sponsee every day. She can have a... She has a sandwich. Okay, I have to have pita bread. I can't do the sandwich thing. You know, if I bought a loaf of sourdough, you know what I do?
A party. I tunnel it out. You'd think I was a mice. I tunnel it out, make it a little ball, and I eat the whole thing, and then there's just this skin. Okay? I've lost my privilege to eat like that. Okay? But you make it like a cracker, like a pita bread. It's just not sexy. You can't get off on it. Okay? But she can still eat her waffles and pancakes like a... So she hasn't lost her privilege. So I hope that little acid test has helped you. So we're going to go ahead and move on unless somebody has a really burning question in regards to absence and food plan. Yes?
Could you just repeat the beginning phrase that you had this last segment, something negates impulse?
Intense training negates instinct.
Instinct. One more time.
Intense training negates instinct.
Thank you.
Intense training negates instinct. God, somebody's stopping. I'm just kidding. And here's why I want you to know that. Because when we go into the recovery quotient, it's really important to know that you need to get up to speed to outrun this disease. Because you need to intensely train yourself to negate the instinct that you've now put inside your body. You weren't born that way. It just feels like it. But it probably got weird for you guys early, and you learned to turn to the food. So now we need to retrain. Okay? So when I was 260 pounds, busting out of a size 24, I used to walk like this. This is called the what?
The waddle.
The waddle. Everybody knows it, right? Used to waddle. My knees were so messed up. This is how I walk today. That looks good, huh? Okay, that looks all powerful, okay? But I had to relearn how to walk. I had to own my power. I had to stand up, okay? And I remember the first time someone says, Sherry, you got to waddle. You're starting to waddle. I mean, what courage it took for that person to tell me that. And it was like, still didn't help. It was about as helpful as someone saying, oh, Sherry, you have such a pretty face. You'd be so pretty if you lost weight. It's like, yeah, right, thanks. Okay, don't ever tell somebody what something negative without being able to tell them how to get out of it. Okay? And remember, unsolicited advice is controlling. Advice that's asked for is helpful. So a lot of times... You know, I'm a coach, right? I'm a sponsor. I am asked to give information frequently. Now, my husband doesn't need a sponsor. He also doesn't need a coach. So I have to go hands to myself, sit on my hands, bite my tongue, and trust that he will find or ask if he wants help. And he knows I'm a really good coach and I'm really good at what I do. And he'll say, hey, can you give me some feedback on them? And I will. But until I'm asked, I keep my mouth shut because otherwise it comes across as controlling and manipulative. And who wants that? Sometimes people just need to talk. Okay. So, where are we with our time? Way late again. Okay. This section now is called the ABCs of disconnecting from your ego and your addiction and connecting to your higher power. So I want to have Barb read this. Get up here, girl.
It says, I asked God to take away my pride, and God said no. He said it was not for him to take away, but for me to give it up. I asked God to make a handicapped child whole, and God said no. He said the child's spirit is whole. Her body is only temporary. I asked God to give me patience, and God said no. He said patience is a byproduct of tribulations. It is not granted, it is earned. I asked God to give me happiness, and God said no. He said he gives me blessings. Happiness is up to me. I asked God to spare me of pains, and God said no. He said suffering draws you apart from worldly cares and brings you closer to me.
What?
I asked God to make my spirit grow, and God said no. He said I must grow on my own, and he will prune me and make me fruitful. I asked God if he loves me, and God said yes. I asked God to help me love others as much as he loves me, And God said, ah, finally, you are beginning to live. The value of persistent prayer is not that God will hear us, but that we will finally hear God.
Thank you. Okay. Just to drive home the point, God will not do for you what you can do for yourself. So, you know that on page 86, you guys read this in your morning meditation? This poor little book is so worn out. Okay, so I want to read, I really want to drive this point home. Oh, who wants to read?
Okay.
Come up fast, somebody fast. Here, Cecilia, if you're fast in this chair, get over here. Who's ever here? Here, come on. All right, somebody. Okay, I'm going to start reading until she gets over here. Okay,
really.
Careful with my book.
I got it.
Okay.
All right, ready? On awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day before we begin. We ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonesty, or self-seeking motives. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance, for after all, God gave us brains to use.
Okay, so here's that. God gave us brains to use, but he's asking us to connect up with him so the brain will be used wisely. Continue.
Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. In thinking about our day, we may face indecisions. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought or decision. We relax and take it easy.
We what?
We don't struggle.
We relax and take it easy. Wow! You mean I don't have to fight and control and push my will upon the world? No, if you're God-directed, you can relax and take it easy.
We're often surprised at how the right answers come after we've tried this for a while.
Wow! Okay, unconscious competence. Nice.
What used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. Still being inexperienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it's not probable that we're going to be inspired at all times. We may pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. We come to rely upon it.
We come to rely upon it. Isn't that amazing? It's right there. Thank you, Cecilia. So, just remember, as we continue on, we constantly remind ourselves we are no longer running the show, humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, not once in the morning, thy will be done. We are then in much less danger of excitement. I like excitement, right? Except what happens then? Get too excited and want to eat. We are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. We become much more efficient. Don't you dig that? We do not tire so easily, for we are not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. It works. It really does. We compulsive overeaters are undisciplined, so we let God discipline us in the simple way we have just outlined. But this is not all. There is action and more action. Faith without works is dead. So here's what I want to say to you in regards to this whole thing about disconnecting from your ego and your addiction and connecting up to your higher power. So let me just do this. So I'll go like this. Like God, even though we worship God and we pray out to God and all whatever we do, okay? In the big book, it says the fundamental idea of God is deep down within inside of us. And if you're not familiar with those pages, I will quote them to you in a minute. But I just want to give you this little visual. See this light above my head? This is God coming to me and through me. See, in program, the easiest thing to know is that there's something greater than you that's breathing you right now. All you have to know is that there is a God and you're not it. Okay? Like one girl, one time, she said, you know what? I'm going to make this chair my higher power because it can hold my big fat ass longer than I can stand on my own two legs. Like, why not? That's the place. place she had to start, okay? Another girl said, you know what? I'm going to take that Beacon's truck right there. That's going to be my higher power. Every time I see a Beacon's truck, I'm going to know that my higher power is this. Because I can move all my furniture, and I could never do that. Okay, I don't care where you start. I don't care where you start. I only care how alive it becomes in you. So if this is God, okay, so you can either do it yourself or you can rely on the stuff that makes all the trees grow. Did anybody here do all that out there? No. Okay, something did. Some being, some source, some energy, some God, Christ, whatever you want to call it, okay? So this is God coming to me and through me, a constant in my life. But I think all religions and spirituality and New Age all believe that we have the power of choice. You can choose your thoughts. You can have the freedom of self-will. They call it many, many different things, but I kind of think that's where all religion, spirituality, and New Age kind of agree on. Do you agree? Okay. So check this out. So here's God coming to me and through me. So I pray myself up in the morning. I pray. I meditate. I read. I write. I do all the things I'm supposed to do. And I'm really God-centered. Now I have a self-centered, God-centered self so that when I go out into the world, I'm really hooked up. I'm really present to be there to help you and to be of service to you and myself and take care of life, right? But then I got this mind that says, you know, how about a little more cheese on that salad? Yeah, and you know, she was kind of a jerk to me. And so I step away from the light, and it starts getting dark. And it starts getting dark, and I start listening to my mind. And my mind is just doing what my mind is supposed to do, which is wander around and think and look for stuff. Whether it's in the future or whether it's in the past, my mind, and if I listen to an undisciplined mind, it will take me so far from the loving presence that I can have that my own best thinking will start marching to me towards a size 24. Does that make sense? So I get pretty soon so far over in the corner that I'm pinched off from all this light and all this clarity and all this peace. Then I'm over there in the corner, but guess what? Who moved? Me. What made me move? My mind, my ego, my addiction, my fears, my whatever. So they say that light, that darkness does not exist. Scientific fact, right? Because as soon as you put light on it, darkness disappears. Okay? Darkness is a word that we've come up with to explain darkness. Look how dark the fireplace is, but now I have light on it, right? Darkness disappeared. Okay, so the choice is ours. So every day I'm marching towards a size 24 or I'm marching towards a size 6. Not next month, not 6 years from now, not 6 years ago, but my life, the one that I'm living right now, is the result of all the choices I've made in the past. Okay, so this morning I get up and I have a choice. Am I going to eat all the pita bread with the toaster? Or am I going to put the pita bread with some tuna or cottage cheese in it? Right? Because anything has a potential. Like if you're a thief, you're wanting to thieve all the time. Like everything has a potential what's a better analogy? Like there's always that potential. Does that make sense? Even at 20 years into this. Do you agree with that? Okay, so I have a choice. So I could have taken a step towards relapse or a step towards recovery. In that thought. But I come back into the light and make sure, am I there, am I connected? Okay, and I just want to really, really be able to drive that point home, because if we don't make those conscious choices, then we're not going to get where we really need to be. So the purpose of our soul is to indicate its desire. I really have a desire to not be a size 24. That wasn't something you guys taught me. That was a burning desire from the inside. Okay? I have a real desire to be a coach. You guys didn't say you should go be a coach. Everything I've done, my whole life, mommy's little helper to becoming a nurse to having my business in New Orleans was all about helping people. I still love to help people. It's the truth of who I am. Now as a coach, I get I have a God job. Okay, I live on truth, on purpose. So my soul's function is to indicate its desire. The function of my mind is to choose between my choices. Does that make sense? Am I going to go towards recovery or relapse? Okay, and the function of my body is to act out the choices. Okay? When you're connected and when you're disconnected, and I don't know if we want to write this up. Let's have some people. Who wants to write on the board? You feel like writing on the board? Okay, and I want, because I've wrote, this has to be something that you really can experience, all right? So when you're in, draw a line down the center of that. And who wants to help her? Okay? Draw a line down the center on one side, right, in the separation, in the addiction, pick a side. Give her addiction. Come on my side, Julie. Get addiction. Okay, addiction. And the other one in the connection. Okay, so when you're in your disconnection, you're in your disease. Go ahead and write that. Addiction, disease. Write small. Addiction, disease, ego. And when you're in the connection, you have the solution, you have the power, you're with your beingness, you're with your higher power. Okay? So when you're in the separation, when you're in the disease, what does it feel like?
Loneliness.
Write it.
I'm sorry? Loneliness.
Yell them out.
Depression.
Fear.
Come on.
Anger.
Pathetic.
Numb.
Alone.
Isolating.
I'm sorry. Right? We say that all the time, right? I'm sorry. Okay.
I'm sorry.
Pathetic. I'm sorry.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Do you know it's a proven statistical fact that women constantly say, I'm sorry, men do not say that? So lose that from your vocabulary and grow up and start saying, I apologize.
Okay.
I apologize.
Controlling.
Selfish.
Okay, when you're in the connection, when you're in the solution, when you're in the recovery, when you're marching towards your size 6, what does that feel like?
Peaceful. Liberating.
Joy. Joyous. Happy.
Free.
Confident.
Strong.
Confident.
Okay, guys. Please. Selfless.
Open.
Glowing.
Realistic.
Spiritual.
Happy with your life. Nothing's changed, but just happy. You've had that shift in perception, right?
Energized.
Okay, so we clearly, thank you very much. So read, each one of you read down each side. Okay, now watch this. Watch this. Okay, where's... Oh, I took my dress back. Okay, let's say this. Here's two people. You're going to be the size 24, and you're the size 6. Okay? My feelings are nothing more than indicators that I need to do something about it. Okay? It's cold outside. That's a physical feeling. I would need to do what? Okay. Okay. How many times do you feel a feeling and you just shove it down? Okay? So if it's hot outside and I have a coat on and I get a physical feeling, I need to do what? Okay? So I look in the mirror and I see that my hair is in 50 different directions and I feel like, what a mess, and it's an indicator to do what? Comb your hair. I never once shove it down and go, I'm not going to comb my hair. Okay, I mean, that's crazy, right? Intense training negates instinct. It has been trained out of us not to feel. If we took a little child and we said to that child again and again, What do you want? Get out of here. Go play on the freeway. I don't want to hear what? Mommy, what? If I did that enough to a child, what would that child eventually do? Get really quiet, and how would the child respond to me? She would avoid, okay? And she would turn away, turn inward, and where would she get her comfort? Food, okay? And the mom, it got exactly what she wanted. Kid became malleable, manipulated, and obedient. I'm sorry, love me. We walk around, women walk around, not just us compulsive overeaters, but we do a lot of this, right? True. Okay? All right, now watch this. What did we say? You guys are size 24, you're size 6? Okay, now watch this. Read me off a feeling.
Sad.
No, solution.
What's on your, you read.
Oh, on my side?
Yeah.
Hopelessness. Here,
oh man, 24, right? Okay, 20. If I shove it down, keep going. How deep does it get? Where's Taco Bell? See how far I went from myself? But if she read off the first feeling, which was what?
Disease.
I'm uncomfortable. I'm disconnected. I'm not easy. I don't have the peace and ease. Okay, what's the next word?
Ego.
Okay, my ego's in it, man. I better shut it down now. I better edging God out. I better get into good, orderly direction. It's a choice. My feelings are nothing more than indicators to change the track I'm on. Okay? All right, so what do you have? So she says, you give me a word, give me a negative word, and then you compound it with something else.
Peaceful.
Oh, I feel really good. I'm in my size 6. I'm peaceful. It's really, really great. Okay? Get up. Knock into me. I feel great. I'm having a great day. Oh, she was such a bitch to me. My God. Here I am over here. You know what? If I ever see her again, I am just going to... You know what? I should have said something to her. Somebody give me some feelings. Give me something. Okay? Pathetic. I'm feeling really bad. See how just walking through the day, she frowned at me, she bumped into me, she threw me out of my game, right? But if I own the feeling and go, you know what? I don't want to feel this way. I'm not going to give her all my power. I want to own my power. She bumped into me. She was rude. She was mean. That's her stuff as mine. I want to take care of me. I want to be self-centered, God-centered self. So I get to re-choose and go, you know what? God bless her. Just to walk around, be mean to people. But you know what? I'm going to be nice in spite of somebody else being mean to me. I take care of my feelings on the spot. And then I get to keep walking like this. Okay? Choice is mine. Does that make sense? Our feelings are nothing more than indicators that we need to do something about them. Okay? If you walk, we might take a walk this afternoon. If we take a walk and there's a rock in our shoe, it's an indicator that we need to do something about it. Okay? Here's what a compulsive overeater does with a rock in their shoe. They'll live with it like that for 20 minutes till it's so unbearable because they don't want to not people please or slow somebody down, and they don't want to come first. And we have all these conversations in our head, to like, well, should I say it now? Should I say it later? What do I do? Does everybody agree with that?
Yes.
Is that crazy?
Yes.
So have you ever once said, excuse me, I got a rock in my shoe. You know, do you mind if we just stop for a second? Put my shoe back on, throw my rock out? Did anybody punish you for doing that? Okay, who is making your mind miserable today? Okay, so who is going to make your mind happy today? Okay, what's that? Say it. Right, because it's your choice. It's your choice. It's your choice. All right, now I don't want to get religious on anybody, but I want to use an example, okay? I hope this is, like, cool. If it's not, just wave to me like, I'm freaked out, okay? A great teacher to me is Christ. So he's on the cross, right? And he's hanging out there, and he's going, like me, God, my God, why have you forsaken me? Why did you let me get so fat? What happened? You know, why didn't you help me? What'd you give me those parents for? What'd you let that happen to me as an insect? Why? Okay? Father, why have you forsaken me, right? So what I learned about Christ as a teacher is that he had the power to re-choose. And he goes, forget it. Forgive them, for they know not what they do. So he tells each guy on each side of him hanging on the cross with him, and goes, hey, you guys, don't worry about it. You'll be with me in heaven today. I was like, wow, that's the power of choice. I want that. That's the power of choice on the spot. Okay? That's the miracle, is that you can choose to change your perception. Your perception. Your choice. Does that make sense? Okay, I hope I didn't freak anybody out with that. Sometimes I don't know where this stuff comes from. Thank you very much, ladies. Thank you. Okay, can everybody see what this is? Yeah, it's a wow. It's a diamond. Those of you on tape, this is probably, a 3x4 piece of crystal. It's cut like a brilliant cut diamond. Okay? So when I go through life, I keep this in my office. All my props and stuff there because I experienced life. Now, one time, what was a diamond?
Coal.
It was coal. What color is the coal?
Black.
Is it very pretty?
No.
Okay, so what happened to make this a diamond?
Pressure.
Pressure. Anybody felt any pressure today? Okay, pressure. A lot of people don't stay in the game because they don't want to go through another cut, polish, and pressure. But look at this. It's beautiful. All right? So we've been cut, we've been polished. Some of us need to go through another cutting and polishing, but we'll be more brilliant than we have ever been because we're uncovering our truest self. And so in every diamond, unless you're like a hope diamond or a saint or something like that, they all have occlusions in them. And I call them soul tears. And so sometimes when I look out through the prism of this, if it slipped and somebody bumped into me, okay, they're not out to get me, but my victimhood is always looking to be justified, then it slides back and I look through the occlusion and my vision isn't clear and I go, that stupid, it ain't that jerk, and then I get up. Right? And then I go, God, heal my perceptions. And I shift my prism back so I can see out through the eyes of God. It's a choice. I don't wait till it's too late. I don't wait till it's on the plate, because when I do, I lose the power of... Okay? Your sponsor is merely a babysitter until what? Okay, until God takes over. Who's going to do this program? Okay? You're going to do it. We're going to do it together, but who's going to be with you at midnight? It's you and your higher power. But if you choose to pinch off from your higher power, you're alone, right?
Yes.
So here I have a fabulous marriage. I will go through a cancer diagnosis, and we're in bed at 2 o'clock in the morning, and guess who feels alone? Me. Okay? Because no matter how many people around you, life gets tough, and it's hard choices. Okay, and so you make choices to get through the night. And if the chatter in your head is so big, you know what I did? I can't even work an iPod yet. I mean, I got a really cool phone. I just don't know how to use the darn thing. It's a really beautiful phone. Where is the darn thing? Anyhow, it's a beautiful phone, but I'm growing into it. You know, it's like I'm learning Facebook and Twitter and all this stuff for my business. But it's like, all this technology. So what I did as I went through this cancer diagnosis, because at 2 o'clock in the morning, it's kind of lonely. And sometimes, you know, it's like, okay, God, I know you're here in physical form, but he's snoring. And my mind's so what I do is that I take a CD, I put in one of those old-fashioned Sony Walkmans. Remember when those things were like $300 or like $20? I'd stick that in my ears and I let, you know, some inspirational speaker rock me back to sleep. Get me out of my own head. Because I have insane ideas coming to me in the form of common sense. So when I'm in trouble, I don't want to be listening to my head. I want to be talking to you and you and you. Because you guys can get me out of my head. If I stick with my head, now I could march straight towards a size 24. So you have to know when you don't feel good, do something about it. Okay? So be committed. How do I feel today? Be more committed to your own joy and happiness. Because have you ever heard this statement? When mama's happy. So why don't we live by that? Don't confuse being self-centered with selfishness. Don't confuse kindness with weakness. Be with you. You will be with you to the day you die. You is the most important real estate you will ever own. Let's embrace ourselves. You took a vow today to go to any length to get to know yourself, to stay with yourself, to not throw yourself away. Does that make sense? Do you have any questions? Okay, no questions. Okay. When you lose your weight, are you done?
No.
What's more important, weight maintenance or weight loss?
Maintenance.
Okay. What's more important, pregnancy or raising a child? Okay, so nobody thinks for that 9 months that the job ends, right? Okay, why would we think that once we've obtained and maintained a healthy body weight, i.e. gave birth to our truest self, why would we then abandon ourselves? That is insane thinking. That's craziness. Like somebody lock us up. So what I want to do is change that concept and put that focus on maintenance. Because you go pregnancy to child raising. How many people went dating, got married, and then just dropped off and forgot about the marriage? If you did, you're divorced today, right? Okay? What about college? How many people went to college and didn't go on and pursue their professional career? If you did, you're probably not happy with what you ended up with. But you went to college to give birth to that new self. We want to continue moving forward with that. So it's like, there's books, all kinds of books, on how to lose it. Where's the book on how to maintain it? Okay, really, really important. All right, so Barb's going to read to us The Battle Between Two Wolves.
Battle Between Two Wolves. One evening, an old man told his grandson about a battle that goes on inside people. He said, "My son, the battle is between two wolves inside us all. One is evil. It is anger, envy, jealousy, sorrow, regret, greed, arrogance, self-pity, guilt, resentment, inferiority, lies, false pride, superiority, and ego. The other is good. It is joy, peace, love, hope, serenity, humility, kindness, benevolence, empathy, generosity, truth, compassion, and faith." The grandson thought about it for a minute and then asked his grandfather, "Which wolf wins?" The old man simply replied, "The one you feed."
Thank you. Okay. The one you feed. Okay. So I really want you to know it's your choice. Okay? Nobody loses their abstinence. They go in to the cashier's window and they cash them in. You don't, it's, abstinence is a choice. Nobody has struck abstinent. It's a choice. Just really want to get that. You can do this. If I can do it, man, if I can do it, you guys can do it. Okay, I'm going to take some questions from the Ask It Basket. Does anybody have a burning question from the audience? Okay. Yeah, so quiet. Nice. Okay. How do we talk to an overeater we meet after some time who has obviously gained weight? Okay, she signed her name, so I wonder if she wants me to talk to her straight out. Yes, no, maybe. Okay, maybe not. Okay. The secret is love. Okay? So how would you want to be spoken to? If you gained weight, how would you want someone to approach you? Comments? And say what? Say what?
I accept you as you are.
I accept you as you are. What else? I see your suffering. What else?
Good to see you.
Good to see you. What else?
How are you?
I feel like a piece of shit.
How can I help you change that?
How can I help you change that? Okay? Because to be there without an answer is not going to help anybody. It's like, man, I'm just dying. Okay? So the magic with our program is that we know how to go into people's caves, sit down with them, and walk them out. So I would go something like this. I have to talk to somebody to do this. Hi.
Hi.
God, I haven't seen you here in ages.
I haven't been around. I'm busy. I'm working.
What's going on?
Work. Lots of work. Work, work, work.
It is so good to see you.
It's good to see you, too.
And see, and I trust the God in me is going to connect with her. Okay? And then I would say, I've missed you so much. How's program?
I haven't been, but I miss the people. I miss the friends. Can we just still talk?
Oh, man, I would love it. Can we talk tomorrow morning at 7 a.m.?
No. Seriously, no.
Okay, when's
10. 10.
10? You know what? Let's talk at 10. I'll call you at 10, okay?
That sounds good.
Okay. All you want is a kitty. Here, kitty, kitty. Here, kitty, kitty, kitty. You don't want to do a frontal assault. You want to just get them open.
Be their friend.
Be their friend. Trust the God in you will connect to the God in them. Trust it. Trust that if you want to come from love, not fixing them, just here, kitty, kitty. Because if the God in you is so real, that person would go, I'd like to talk. You'll see it. You'll see the shift in their eyes. And you go, thank you, God, for working through me. Thank you. Please let me help your people. You'll see it. Okay? Time me on these things. Somebody, don't let me go over. If we introduce ourselves as a compulsive overeater, only how or where do the anorexics, bulimics, newcomers identify? Okay? Now, I addressed this earlier, so it's a test question. Since this is called Overeaters Anonymous, and we want to stick with the clean and the clarity of it, how do we identify anorexic and bulimic? How do we do it? Did you get that? No. Okay. In AA, they say, hi, my name is Bob, I'm an alcoholic. Bob could probably really be a drug addict. Right? And a compulsive overeater, and a DA, and a GA, right? But he wants to keep with that program. He says, hi, my name is Bob, I'm an alcoholic. Okay, in your pitch is where you say, I'm an anorexic. Because you want the identity of the group. We don't want to be separate. That's all that that's for. We're here to help the other person. You know, in this big book, on the pages here, page 1 through 88, is all about me getting help. Pages 89 to 164 is 75 pages all about me helping others. 50% of this program is not about me. I mean, is about me, and the other 50% is about me carrying the message to you. Okay, so I hope that that answers. Yes.
How long of a time do you want?
Yeah, like, okay, I'm going to do this, my last question. Yes.
Well, I have a question with that question.
Say it again.
I have a question with that.
Okay.
It's just a question. Like, I've talked about this earlier, like, when people are anemic or anorexic, and they do say that as far as their identification, sometimes they can identify with another person across the room that may have a similar problem. Just like if someone had breast cancer versus colon cancer, it's all cancer, but someone with breast cancer is going to go through different treatment versus someone that has colon cancer. I guess, what are your thoughts on that?
My thoughts are, I think it would be really messy. Now, I'm not an alcoholic, but this is what I hear. Hi, my name is Laura, and I'm a compulsive overeater, a vomiter, a bulimic, an anorexic, an alcoholic, a cutter, a breast cancer survivor, and a debtor. It's like, I thought this was OA. How's that helping the newcomer? That's all about her. Okay, so in my pitch, so I'd say, hi, my name is Sherry, I'm a compulsive overeater. In my pitch, I would say, just to qualify for the newcomer, my top weight was 260 pounds, was busting out of size 24. I'm now 54 years old with 20 years of abstinence, and I'm now size 6. Okay, so I've qualified without making myself different, and I'd also say, you know what? I'm recovering from a breast cancer diagnosis, and I'm really doing great. Then all those people that are attracted to that, then they can come up and connect at that level. Does that make sense? And if we want, as a whole, every meeting is autonomous. If you want your meeting to be inclusive of that, then say, we want everybody to pitch this way. But in our traditions, it's stated that way. We can go to World Service and have anything changed, but it's always for the greater good of all. Okay, so I'm going to stop with those questions now so I can stay on track. And
is that where you're pitched from?
Yes, what?
Is it where you're from when you guys pitch? Because we don't really pitch.
How about share? You share. Okay. So if we have a leader meeting, the leader would speak for 10 minutes, 20 minutes, half hour, 45 minutes, and then we would open it up, and people would raise their hand and share. Is that what you guys have?
Yeah.
Okay. So we call that a pitch. Okay? Because we want to pitch recovery. And what a pitch is a share, is 1 minute on the problem and 2 minutes on the solution. Because the size of our meetings, we have timed 3-minute pitches. We pitch recovery. 1 minute on the problem, 2 on the solution. To give hope to who? Because we don't want this to be emotions anonymous. We don't want this to be a therapy session. We want to show those newcomers, there's recovery here. There's hope. There's hope. So sometimes you don't even know what your own solution is, but you're going to say, I'm going to make 3 outreach calls this week. I'm going to reach out. I'm going to go read 6 pages out of the big book. I'm going to go talk to 3 people after me. Sometimes you don't know what the solution is. So pitch and share is the same. So that's pitch. That's probably a Hollywood thing, right? You go pitch your TV story. Who knows? I don't know. Thanks for asking that. Jeez, that's crazy. Okay. All right. So, all right. Pretty much on time. Okay, let's go ahead and pass out Safe from Relapse with Recovery Quotient. This is from page XXIX in the big book. And it says, if you are not brimming over with self-reliance and contentment and not experience a sense of victory followed by such a peace and serenity and utter confidence, page 14 out of the big book, then it's time to really get down to causes and conditions. Get out of your own way and get the life you were meant to have. The mind that got you into trouble can't be the one to get you out. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, page 64, states, our liquor, food, drugs, debting, etc. was but a symptom, so we had to get down to causes and conditions. It also states that unless we can again find the perfect peace and ease, which with the food, drugs, debting, etc. used to give us, we will return to eating. Page 69 of the big book reads, whatever our ideal turns out to be, we must be willing to grow towards it. Page 133 of the big book states, a body badly burned by alcohol does not often recover overnight, nor does twisted thinking and depression vanish in a twinkling. Therefore, the main problem of the alcoholic centers in the mind rather than his body. Just to drive that point home, that we have the right to be utterly confident and to feel really good about ourselves. Because if you look at a newborn baby, they're so enamored with their feet, their arms, their leg, even their feces. They'll just put it all over the place. Okay? They love themselves. And everybody adores them. Okay? They don't go, hey, you're so awful. Okay? Everybody loves the newborn baby. So treat yourself that same way. Okay, any other questions before we move into the recovery quotient? Okay. Many people think there's a story. No, I'm good. There's a story that there were 6 prisoners in California, I think it was in California, and they did this incredible prison escape, and they escaped out of prison. And it was an incredible feat. This happened about 4 or 5 years ago. Does anybody remember this story? And I was so impressed. How do you get out of prison? It's kind of like being fat, right? We're stuck in a prison in our own body. And I thought, how in the world did they get out of prison? I'm fascinated that people can escape their old life. So they get out, but guess what? Over the next 2 weeks, they slowly caught each and every one. And I was just as fascinated how they got back to prison. Because they didn't have a plan to stay out. They put more emphasis, I'll take one of those recovery quotient charts too. They put more emphasis on how to get out than stay out. What's more important, losing the weight or maintaining it? Okay, do you maintain it on your plate or in your head? Okay, if you don't take care of your head, it's going to show up where? Okay, when it's on the plate, it's... Okay, see, you've got all the information. So you're going to have to self-talk yourself all the way through this, with the help of your sponsor, with the help of your church, your gym, your friends, put a community around you. Whatever you need to do, your therapist, your doctor, your lawyer, I don't care who you go to, get help. If you could have done it yourself, you would have. Okay? So, here's what I decided to write years ago, and this is the ABC's recovery quotient. The list of what needs to be done to win. Are you doing all you can, or are you doing all that's required? What's the difference between a winner and a loser? The winner is willing to do everything the loser doesn't want to do. So I thought to myself, I never want to forget how I got home. And I didn't want to do a Hansel and Gretel and leave little breadcrumbs for the birds to pick up, and then I'd forget how I got home. Because when you're really dialed in, when you put food out and God in, losing weight is really easy. We've all experienced that, but also the disease, the addiction, the ego, the little kid, the fear, it burns through. It always does. We're always bouncing from beingness to humanness. We can never stay in one world. It's like night and day. We can't have too much sun or burn the world up. I can't have too much darkness. All the plants would die, all right? So we're constantly in the humanness and in the beingness, and in the humanness and in the beingness, because our feelings are nothing more than indicators that we need to do something about it, okay? So this is my recovery quotient, and I want you to be able to think about it. What would work for you, okay? So, and this, you remember, you start on a tricycle and you evolve into a bicycle with training wheels, and then you choose how you want it to be from there. So 12 steps, and so I made this little chart. My work and my steps every day of the week, 7 days a week. 8 tools. Okay? I believe there should be 12. Our tools are writing, service, literature, meetings, telephone, anonymity, food plan, and a sponsor. Okay? And I believe the ninth tool should be exercise. The tenth tool should be crying. I think crying just kind of resets our whole human computer. I think rest is a phenomenal tool because R-E-S-T, rest is essential for strength tomorrow. And I think that weighing in is really, really important. It's like you got to watch that gas gauge on the car. You don't pretend that's not really empty. You have to learn how to feel your feelings along with that. A minimum of 5 to 7 meetings a week. I don't care if you're in an area where you only have 2 meetings a week. You can get online. You can create your own meeting. You can start a meeting in your area. Call a sponsor. Be a sponsor. Talk to newcomers. Thank the speaker. Do you know in AA, nobody will talk to anybody else until they go up and speak, thank the AA speaker? I mean, I think, in OA, we just jump off by ourselves and go do our thing. So it's like, we need to be more like AA. Talk to newcomers. Pitch, lead, speak at meetings, workshops, go to one, give one. Prayer and meditation. A lot of people go, God, man, I can't meditate. No, I don't get the meditation thing. And when I started meditating, I would meditate for 45 minutes once a year. And I did it really perfectly. And it didn't help me at all. But I thought, I can't do this every day. So thank God to one of you, one old timer, I go, I really have a hard time, with the I got the prayer thing, I got the gimme gimme, but I'm having a hard time with the listening. And so she goes, well, why don't you do a timed meditation? And I go, well, I do 45 minutes. She goes, no. She goes, no, something you can do every day. I go, well, what do you mean? She goes, well, I set the timer for 8 minutes. I go, you do? She goes, yeah. And she goes, sometimes I peek at the clock, and sometimes I take a sip of coffee, but I do it every single day. So I said, wow, I can do that. So I started off with 2 minutes. I felt so good after 2 minutes, I did it to 3 minutes. Then I did it to 4, then I did it to 5. And you know what, that prayer and meditation thing, it just gets me so set in my day. I absolutely love it. And sometimes when it's really hard for me to sit and simmer down, I do reverse timed meditation, and I'll set the meditation for 1 minute, and I go, oh, that felt good. And then I'll add another minute because it even felt better, instead of when my rebellious nature is really up, than to sit there for 15 minutes like, it ain't gonna happen. My voice is too loud. So I go reverse, and I make it really small. I start with a 1 minute meditation, and then I go to 2. Does that make sense? Easy, easy to do. Okay. Service position, always have one. Why should we have a service position? Yeah, that's my only reason to have a service position. Gets my butt in my chair with my reserve. There's, I got my name reserved at a chair at every meeting, right? And having a service position helps you to get to know everybody. It gets you to a meeting. I think having a service position is one of the best ways to get in the game and to get to know people and to get involved. 7-day food plan. Do you think when I was newly abstinent, I started off with a 7-day food plan? No way. Man, I couldn't even manage my money 7 days a week. I was going to ATM every day, going to the grocery store every day. I was just a mess every day. Now I never have to go to the ATM, and now I only grocery shop once a week. Tell someone what I'm keeping to myself. Think I like that? No. Okay, weigh once a week. Think I like that? No. I don't like weighing any more than I do like taking a test or putting gas in the car. But it's a necessary thing. I need to know where I'm at. Okay, listen to tapes, CDs, whatever. Grocery shop, weigh and measure food. There's certain foods that it's just automatic. Like, it just kind of, there's the cup. I just measure it. Unconscious competence. It's just something I do now. It's become a habit. It's wonderful. Write down food, commit the food, and email. I've never been big on that, but a lot of my sponsees love to do that. And I say, go email your food to somebody else. I'm here to change your mind, your life. I don't really care about your food. Once your food is set in your abstinence, unless it becomes a problem, then we focus on the food. But the work that I do is really in the mind. And but sometimes it helps people to email it to somebody. And so it's like, go for it. No padding meals. Does everybody know what that means?
No.
Okay, padding meals is, the other day, Friday, I'm out to lunch with my girlfriend, and I really like this Greek salad that we have. And for some reason, suddenly, the thought occurred to me, it would be a really good idea to add more feta cheese to my salad. And I did. Because I had a strange mental what? Okay, and I took action on it. Didn't think. Okay, feelings are nothing more than indicators that we need to do something about it. I wasn't feeling anything. I just thought that that was a really good idea. And so, you know, we were talking, and I said, and she said, well, how are you feeling? How are you doing? I go, you know what? I'm doing really great. Except for ordering the extra cheese in the salad. First off, it was so much cheese. You know what I mean? It ruined my salad. And it was like, what did I need to coat my nerves from? And it was because I was in so much pain that my mother-in-law has just, you know, decreased. And it's just that it was a really hard week. And so it's like I have to watch out padding my meals, and I have to watch out what those little things are. Here's another one. When I start padding, so from that could add to, could you put croutons on it, please? And then pretty soon that could be like, ah, who wants a salad? Let me get something really good. Okay, so a little padding, a little there. Here's something that a sponsee of mine, that she watches out for this. When she starts putting more salt on something, that's a trigger to her to know something's up. Salt is not a thing. More sauce, please. More salad dressing. More gooey, yummy. Yeah. Okay, then we know. Okay, does anybody have anything that they're consciously aware of when they pad meals?
Sure. When I look at half a cup measure out of the oatmeal container, and there's another quarter cup on the top, and God forbid that my head shake because one of those lights is going to fall.
Right.
I'm not on that boiling water.
Okay, padding your meal, okay? What would that lead to unchecked?
Why use the measuring stone? Just dumping it.
See? Well, I already added that. Might as well add some more. Well, shoot. I already added that. Might as well put some peanut butter in it and some butter. Oh, she nods her head. She knows. I thought you all would just go, I don't do that. Oh, man. I used to just, why not just turn it into a cookie and bake it? See how it goes? See? So padding our meals, we have to watch. Are we marching towards our size 6 or our size 24, whatever your numbers are? Okay. Let's talk about, anybody else pad? Butter.
Yeah, like I can cook eggs, for example, with no butter. I just cook them with steam.
Okay.
But if I get the idea, hey, I think I will put a pat of butter in there and fry them. It's like, I know, like, what's going on?
Right, and see how harmless, it's one thing, but see how one is too many and 1,000 is not enough? We have to be hyper-vigilant to our thoughts and our behaviors. Thoughts and behaviors. What's another one?
Putting either butter or creamy mashed potatoes.
Okay.
Adding extra fat.
Coat the nerves, pad the meals, bring it on. What's somebody else's?
And if I was ever ordering something and then I say, and I knew that was a sign for me that that's too much.
Okay.
I just ordered the thing.
Right.
And not an and.
Okay. So when we hear the salt, the and, we need to go, ooh, something's up. Because it doesn't always register as a feeling, because there's parts of us that are not wired. Intense training negates instinct. So it's like we have to rewire and go, ooh, that's that weird behavior again. Like we know when we hit over those bumps in the road, we know to pull back. But somehow, when we pull off and we add a little more butter, a little more dressing, pretty much, you know, it's like, oh, I'm going, trying to ram in the mountain. It's like, oh, Sherry, come on, back, pull. Okay? It's that discipline.
Like
fruits and vegetables, I'll make myself some
more vitamins
and minerals, and the antioxidants, so I'll just
put more apples
or
two more carrots,
it's going to
be the vitamins, but really
it's been
pretty good.
Okay, excellent. Here's one for me. I forgot, I hadn't done this in so long. I can't stand the word that binging is part of abstinence, because I don't think that you can identify binging. Binging at 260 pounds looks entirely different at binging at at a size 6. Do you think I binge today?
Probably.
Absolutely. What do you think the definition of compulsive overeating is?
Taking one
non-mindful bite. Okay, we're compulsive overeaters, so therefore we're going to do that. So what, we can never be abstinent? That's crazy, right? Okay, here's the definition of compulsive overeating. It's putting more food in my mouth when I already have food in my mouth. Like a dog. Oh, 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 oh. That was me gulping it in. Okay? Now, if I go to dinner with you, I don't eat like that, but when I'm by myself, oh, 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 oh. My tail almost wags. I don't even have a tail. I can't talk that. Like, and Sherry, there's nobody going to take your food. So I want to be aware that that's compulsive overeating for me. Okay? And binging can look like this. Compulsive overeating and binging, I can have my carrot, right? And I used to make what's that, Hidden Valley Ranch? But I would make it with sour cream and I'd measure it out, right? And it's so low calorie and it tastes so good. Well, here's where the padding begins and the binging and the compulsive overeating. Pretty soon it's like I don't measure. Well, first I start off with like, here's the little, right? And here's the little carrot, right? And it's like that. It's real dainty, right? And I'm just having, right? On a bad day, it's like this whole carrots are this little bit, and I've got this thing addressing, and pretty soon it's like the carrot looks like a spoon for the dressing. Okay, so I don't want to say that I don't binge, because I do, and I don't want to say that I don't compulsively overeat. You know, rice cakes. Do you think rice cakes are dangerous? They're really dangerous for me, the stupid little things. I tried to eat those, and I saw them down like this. And then I'm full of dust on the front. God, I'm getting so excited. I'm spitting and everything. It's like I have dust all over the front of me. Now I can eat pita bread. I can't eat a rice cake. It sets off the eater in me. I just talk about binging, man. I just like a beaver. Okay? So it's like you get that. It's like we have to know who we are. Some people can eat a rice cake. It tastes like sawdust and styrofoam. Tim didn't set the eater. I don't know what's in the stupid thing. It looks like styrofoam, tastes like styrofoam. I don't know what's so exciting about it. So anyhow, I think it's important to know when we start veering off, okay? Exercise 3 times a week. Walk for 20 minutes. Do something. Try and hit the checklist. Don't listen to my disease. Insane ideas come into me in the form of common sense. Identify and plan for high-risk situations. Remember, Bill said, he said you were going to have certain trials and low spots ahead. You're a human being, man. You're going to live life on life's terms, not yours. Just because you're in recovery doesn't mean that you are not going to feel. It means you are going to feel better, i.e. feelings. Okay? Plan ahead what you will say and do and have several backup strategies in case one doesn't work. Plan for high-risk situations. Plan it. Man, you know, when airplanes first started saying, you know, we're not serving food or you can buy food on the airplane. No. Ever since I got abstinent, I started bringing my own food on the airplane because I can't eat. And I want to like my food, and I don't trust people to take care of me with food. So it's like, that's a high-risk situation for me. All right? So it's like, I want to take care of myself. And so then one time, you know, my husband and I are flying, and he's like, no, I'll get something on the plane, and I buy something at the airport that I really like, right? So they throw him, right, we're flying coach, right? They throw him one of those cardboard boxes that really should have just gone flying out the window. It's like, it's so awful. I mean, I've had better frozen food than that. So here I have this nice, freshly cooked, and I'm eating my thing, and he's like, oh, I should have done what you had done. But it's better to get your own food. You know, it's like plan for high-risk situations. People are not always going to talk to you. I mean, take care of you, take care of you. Statements to defend and reinforce recovery when my disease starts talking. Okay? So when that starts talking, right? When that addiction starts talking, what are you going to say? What are some of the things that your addiction says to you?
One more won't hurt.
One more won't hurt. What are you going to say?
I already blew it.
Wait, let's answer. Let's get the fix on that.
Abstinence is the most important thing in my life, without exception.
Do you believe that?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. I blew it. What are you going to defend that one with?
Abstinence begins at any time.
Okay. She said abstinence begins any time. Right here. Yes.
I used to say, what did I just learn from that?
What did I just learn from that? Okay, you know what I say? Call a vegetable and move on. I think there's a lot to be learned from Scarlett O'Hara. For tomorrow is another day. Like, forget it. Don't dwell on it. Don't pick at it. Don't drive your car over the cliff. Just go, you know what? I feel a little crying about that meal, but you know what? The next meal I'm making better. It's not going to be easy. It's not going to be pretty, but I'm going to do it. I choose to win at my life. Got a little messy, so what? Call it a vegetable and move on. Make sense? What then? Yeah, well, you know, it's power of choice, right? Three people I've committed to call when my food gets weird. Have people in place. Have people in place. Do you think that my sponsor really gives me such incredible, brilliant stuff every day? Pretty much, she and I just kind of like check in, blah, blah, blah. But I keep her in place. Because I know that there's certain trials and low spots ahead, and I want to be able to call up the phone, already have an established relationship, and go, ah, I'm scared, and have her talk me down and know I'm okay. Because there will be a time that says, I don't want to call her. I don't want to do it. It's like, don't listen to that head, because when something happens, you'll be all alone, and guess who's there? Miss Ego, Miss Addiction, Miss Little Kid with a 7-year-old soul tears. And you got to be able to save yourself. Focus on the end results. Do not look at where your feet are at. Don't look at where your feet are at. Know that you've made a vow and keep moving towards that. Be committed to the long-term process. Okay? And check off as many as you can do and just say, you know what, I'm only going to do three of these this next week. I'm going to pick the three easiest ones and I'm going to do it absolutely perfectly. I want to read to you perfectionism, not to be confused with perfect abstinence, but I think that this is something that's important to know. Want to read? Right there. Yeah. Tell us your name.
Nancy, compulsive reader.
Hey, Nancy.
Perfectionism has nothing to do with getting it right. It has nothing to do with fixing things. It has nothing to do with standards. Perfectionism is a refusal to let yourself move ahead. It is a loop, an obsessive, debilitating, closed system that causes you to get stuck in the details of what you are doing to lose sight of the whole. The perfectionist fixes one line of a poem over and over until no lines are right. The perfectionist redraws the chin line of a portrait until the paper tears. The perfectionist writes too many words to the same line that she never gets to the rest of the play. The perfectionist is never satisfied. Perfectionism is not a quest for the best. It is a pursuit of the worst in ourselves. The part that tells us that nothing we do will ever be good enough, that we should try again. No, we should not. We deny that in order to do something well, we must first be willing to do it badly. Usually, when we say we can't do something well, what we mean is that we don't do something unless we can guarantee that we'll do it perfectly.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we don't want to get stuck in that endless, debilitating loop of perfectionism, like alcoholism, the incredibly short memory. We're going ahead now, and we're passing out the 12-step writing exercise. And I want to share a story with you before we begin this. So when you get that paper, if you could just put it face down. I want to share a story with you that last June, before all of this diagnosis happened, I had been invited to do the ABCs of abstinence in Denver, Colorado. And so I was very busy with my business and my marriage and my life and my family and just, you know, loving my life and just going to the beach and body surfing and having a great old time, right? During that process, my beloved little cat was dying and I needed to put my cat down. And I had so much going on, and it was like the ABCs was quickly approaching. And, you know, when you start talking to a committee leader, you make the connection, and then pretty soon you're like, everything's established, and you don't talk to them for a while. They're on with their life, they're on with theirs. So I call So I'm listening to this CD, and on this CD, they're talking about you can have a grievance or you can have a miracle, but you can't have both. So I said, well, I really need to pay attention to that because I'm really, really grieving. I really want the miracle. And so I listened to it again, and I go, yeah, you know, I'm really grieving. I'm gonna make sure I listen to the CD again. So in the interim of listening to this CD, I'm touching base with my ABC contact in Denver, Colorado, and we're doing a tie-down meeting. And I said, now where exactly am I going? Where are we going? Because I literally get in a stranger with somebody I've never seen and drive up into the mountains. Okay? Never met Julie before in my life. Okay? We get in the car. We have a great time. Feel like I've known her my whole life. So she says, it's going to be in Dillon, Colorado. And I go, Dillon, Colorado? And she goes, yeah. I go, Dillon, Colorado? Not Denver. She goes, Dillon? She goes, yeah. And I go, oh, good, good. Oh, that's great. And I go, okay, great. See you in 2 weeks, blah, blah, blah. And I go, Dillon, Colorado? No. That's where my whole family's from. Dillon? That's where my mom was born. So I go listen to the CD again, and the CD says, you can have a grievance, or you can have a miracle, but you can't have both. I thought, oh my God, they're not talking about grieving. They're talking about a grievance. And man, did I have mother issues. I've worked on my mother issues for years. And I thought, God, I still have some grievances with her. I thought I was kind of free and clear. I'd really cleaned up a lot of the past. But you know, I still had a little Betty bashing going on, right? So I thought, you know, I'm going to Dillon, Colorado. And I had been invited to Dillon, Colorado to do this retreat a couple of years before, but I was already too booked. I can't do OA full time. You know, I have to have a life too. So I finally, you know, say, yeah, I'll come and do it. So I'm going to go do it. And I'm like, Dillon, Colorado. So I thought, you know what? I want this to change my life. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to go out, and in our yard, we have a pond in the backyard, and I went and I got this rock, this pebble, and it was all mossy and green. And I thought, you know what? I'm taking this to Dillon, Colorado, because I want to be free of the moss. I want to be free of the yuck. I really want to let it go. And so I let it sit out in the backyard and have the moss dry off and just return to a rock. And on one side of the rock, I wrote in pen what I wanted to be free of. Unbroken, broken promises. Release my mom from not being the mother I thought I should have, and all the things I really wanted to be free of. And on the other side, I flipped it and I wrote everything that I wanted to walk away from. I really wanted to be free from her. I wanted to release the past and set myself free. I wanted to be free of broken promises and looking to always justify my victimhood. See, I knew you were going to fail me. See, I knew you'd never do it, right? I mean, that's the kid in me with the soul tears. We all have them. And so then it's like, you know, a couple of days goes by and I get this idea like, you know, I'm going to take some sunflower seeds and I'm going to plant them in Dillon. So I get this little packet of sunflower seeds. And I'm just like having like this spiritual awakening, this release of, and going on my way to Dillon, Colorado. My grandma used to smoke her cigarette and have her little Terrington and whatever the cigarettes were called and her cup of coffee, and she'd tell me stories about Dillon, Colorado. And so anyhow, the girls pick me up in Denver, Colorado, and we drive 2 hours to Dillon. And I see buffalo, and I see bighorn sheep, and you know, the city kids, you show me that kind of stuff, and I'm like, wow, 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 I just think it's so incredible. So we're in Dillon, and I find out the hotel is like literally a 5-minute walk to the Dillon River, which is the stories that my grandma used to tell me about, where the buckboard flipped over and the baby died, and you know, they lived on farms back then in Dillon, Colorado. It's like way up in the hills. So, I've got my rock, and I'm thinking, okay, now while I'm there, I'm going to have somebody, you know, I'm just going to get some quiet time by myself, and I'm going to go drop the rock. I'm going to be free of this. I'm going to let it go. Well, anyhow, you know, that's my plan, right? God always has a better plan. So I get there Friday night, and for some reason, I feel like I've never left home. I feel like I know all of you, just like I feel here. It's weird. It's weird, isn't it? It is weird. I think it's weird. Weird just means I don't understand, but it's wonderful. So I start telling this whole group of people on this three-day retreat my whole experience. And I said, hey, you know what? When we're done tonight, I'm going to walk over to the river. If anybody wants to go with me, I'm going to drop my rock of problems. And I ain't ever taken it back. And if anybody wants to go with me, you can come. So I thought, one or two people will go with me. 60 people marching, following me around to the river. It was an absolute blast. And so we all stood in a circle, and we said, we all held our rock, and we all said, I want to be free of this, and I want to gain this. And as we went around in a circle, then we all faced the river, and we, on the count of three, we all threw our rocks into the river. And it was incredible because the energy of release was so powerful. And we all dropped our rocks in the Dillon River. And so I want to invite you, as we do our 12-step writing exercise today, when we're finished with this, then I want you to know that whatever you write on this 12-step paper, or you want it something different, afterwards, we're going to go find a rock. If you want it, this is not mandatory. Nothing's mandatory. If you feel like taking a walk when we're done at 4, some, close to 4, 4:30, then we'll go find a rock, and we're going to bless our rock, and we're going to release to that rock what we want to be free of. We're going to change all the energies in ourselves, and we're going to make another vow to be free. We're going to release the past and set ourselves free and become whole and new and complete. And so if you want to do that, then you can find a rock with me, and we'll walk down here to this little platform, and we'll have our own little ceremony. So I just wanted to share that with you. I didn't bring any sunflower seeds because I never really know what I'm going to do on these retreats. That's why the tapes and every retreat is entirely different. So then after we did that, then we dug a hole for the sunflower seeds. A girl had a bottled water, and she put the water on the seeds, and we all said what we wanted to walk away from, and we created holy ground in Dillon, Colorado, and it changed my life. And there's more to that story, but you can hear it on the other tape. So thank you. Okay, so now Julie is going to come up and lead us through the 12-step writing exercise. You cool with that? I'm going to put this microphone on, huh? I think I am. We're going to pause for just a second.
Trying to jump 40 minutes.
I'm going to need a timer. And I'm going to get, oh, that might work a little easier than trying to read my little tiny watch.
How much time do you want?
Just go from the pulse of the room, because this isn't current.
Okay.
Just, you'll know.
Does everybody have the life to dance when you learn the 12 steps handout? Dance? Okay. Life to dance when you learn the 12 steps. Identify a situation in your personal or work life that is currently a source of resentment, fear, sadness, or anger. Write a brief statement describing the situation and indicate why it concerns you. Nice.